And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is money well spent. Each of my guests is describing their subject matter, and we'll decide if it's money well spent. My next guest is the publisher of The Left Business Observer, a publication that addresses economics with writing that is neither dry nor boring. He's turned his attention to the AARP. He believes that the AARP has become nothing more than an insurance company and is no longer lobbying force for older Americans. We'll discuss his thesis to determine if your AARP membership is money well spent. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Doug Henwood is the editor and publisher of Left Business Observer. He got his BA in English from Yale back in 1975. At Yale, Henwood was briefly a conservative and a member of the Party of the Right, but he quickly came to his senses, as he put it. From 1976 to 1979, Doug did graduate work in English at the University of Virginia, fulfilling all requirements for his PhD except that great stumbling block, the dissertation. The dissertation was never written, but in the course of boning up on the theory of history and U.S. political system, Doug got more deeply interested in economic matters and less so in literary ones. Doug was convinced by the 1980s that the experiment with free market economics was a financial and social disaster, and that much left writing on economics was usually dry and dated, so he founded Left Business Observer in September of 1986. Every issue of the magazine includes a report on the world's financial markets and central banks. Doug is also a contributing editor to The Nation and hosts a radio weekly program on KPFA in Berkeley. His latest book is titled After the New Economy, and it was published back in 2003. Welcome to the show, Doug. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being our guest, and I love having you on because you are a subject matter expert and very passionate about this subject. So let's dive right into it. A couple of days ago, the Wall Street Journal reported that AARP, the American Association of Retired Persons, the most powerful lobbying group for older Americans, is dropping its longstanding opposition to cutting Social Security benefits. This removes a major stumbling block in the reforming of entitlement programs in the United States. This act also raises your ire. So what's the significance of AARP's reversal on this stance?
Well, AARP is perceived as being very powerful in Washington and, a force to be reckoned with. So it now has come around to the elite consensus that Social Security benefits need to be cut as any kind of budget deal. And I think what this means is that present retirees are not going to get touched. People who are near retirement, I guess people who are about 55 or over, are not going to have anything done to their potential benefits. But what they're going to go after is the benefits of people now in their 30s and 40s. There may be some technical ways of going about that, like just adjusting the cost of living formula or whatever, but the effect will be to cut benefits for future retirees. I think there's a bit of a cynical calculation. By protecting the older population, those who are near retirement or already drawing benefits, you remove a lot of the political opposition to any kind of such benefits. And I think a lot of younger people think they're not going to get Social Security anyway, so we'll just shrug our shoulders and say, that's what I was expecting. But the major point I would like to make is that the Social Security problem that everyone agrees is so enormous and so frightening is not really a problem at all. There are two components to my saying that. One is that the projections that show Social Security in trouble are based on extremely gloomy economic assumptions. They project essentially 75 years of near depression rates of economic growth. If we have something like more normal rates of economic growth, then there's no problem at all. But if they really do think that we're facing 75 years of near depression, that's what we should be talking about. If the economy is that sick, that is a very serious problem. We should be talking about it more explicitly than we are. But the other issue is that even if you accept the official projections, the problem is not large. The budgetary the budget deficit that Social Security itself faces is, according to the official projections, only about one-third of the cost of the equivalent of the increase in defense spending since 2000. It's about the equivalent of what we're spending on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So if we can afford those things, we can afford to give people a decent retirement. My argument is that it's not really a serious problem if it is a problem at all.
All right. Well, there's a lot of information in the answer that you gave me, Doug. My guest is Doug Henwood. So let's start out. You tossed the bomb right at the beginning, talking about AARP coming over to the elite consensus that benefits have to be cut. Now, I will grant you that Social Security is not as big a problem as everyone is making it out to be. Social Security is an annuity, and like all annuities, people pay money in with the expectation of taking it out at the end, and for the most part, that has been pretty well mapped out since 1947. So I'm not overly concerned about that. There may be a shortfall. That shortfall could be as much as 25% of the needs of Social Security, which is a staggeringly high number when you look at it. And then you drew the comparisons to the defense budget and to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, which is a sidebar because really we have to talk about the pool of money that's available for people when they need it. That 25% shortfall does have to be addressed at some point or another. But if you look around the world, Doug, here's my point. It took a long way to get to this question. But if you look around the world, if you take a look at other countries, Greece, look at Japan, look at Great Britain right now. Wherever there's fiscal chaos going on or economic conservatism, entitlement reductions immediately follow. And while Social Security may not be a ticking time bomb, Medicare and Medicaid are, because those are directly dependent on rising health care costs and aging population. And there have to be changes made there. So talk to me about, number one, the rest of the world seems to be cutting entitlement programs. The United States isn't. What is that story? What picture is this painting for the American people right now, Doug?
Well, we have cut Social Security to some degree, starting with the Greenspan reforms in 2003, and then inflation lowered, and they fiddled with the cost of the living adjustment figure. Not seriously, but there has been a
right.
bit of a cut.
Not seriously.
But let's bracket that. Well, a couple of things I would say. One is that a lot of other European countries have a more severe aging problem than we do. We have a relatively young population, and until recently at least, had a high level of immigration, which meant that we had a lot of young people paying into the system that may never take out any money. I would also say that while the projected shortfall in Social Security is about a quarter of what it's supposed to pay out, as a percentage of GDP, and that's actually about a little over 1%, not a large number. It's very manageable. It's not a crisis. It's nothing to panic about, and it's nothing to do anything drastic with. But I think we're in this moment now where we've had very high deficits, 9-10% of GDP, record high, at least since World War II deficits.
Yes.
And it's created a sense of hysteria. But those deficits are temporary. They're based on a severe recession and the bailouts that were crafted to address that recession. If we go back to something like a normal economy, according to the Congressional Budget Office projections, the deficit problem in the next several years is not all that serious. There's no reason to get all excited and do something insane and panic and create this sense of budgetary emergency. It's just not warranted by the official projections. These are not my numbers. These are the CBO's. Certainly Medicare and Medicaid are problems, although, again, if you look at the CBO projections, it's not a serious problem for the next 10 years. This is nothing to panic about and do anything reckless. But I think that sense of panic and hysteria is useful to people who really have it out for these programs and wanted to cut them since their inception. We do have a medical inflation problem. There's no question about it.
Without a doubt.
My personal national health care system has done a much better job of universal coverage and cost control. Other countries' medical systems are far less expensive than ours. We have by far the most expensive system in the world and also some of the worst health numbers in the world. We're not getting we're not getting a good value for money. If you want to use the theme of your show, on what we spend on health care. Just our public sector alone, Medicare, Medicaid, and various state programs and such, spends almost as much as some other countries do on their entire health care system. So we're really spending a lot of money and not getting much for it. I think we could allocate that money a lot better by having a single-payer system in which the motive of profit is removed from health care. This should be other countries have done this far, far better than we do, but we're not really talking about what they're doing. What we're talking about now is just cutting people's benefits and shifting more costs to beneficiaries. Paul Ryan's plan for Medicare, for example, would require elderly beneficiaries to double their out-of-pocket spending from like $6,000 to $12,000 a year using current figures. That's an enormous amount of money. Most elderly people couldn't afford to do that, so what would they do? Just get sick and die, I guess. I don't see how they have any other choice. So just focusing on Medicare and Medicaid alone is really missing the problem, which is our entire healthcare financing system.
Well, I think both you and I would agree that healthcare cost inflation is something that needs to be addressed. You and I would radically disagree on the way in which we do that. I'm not at all for a single-payer system or government intervention in that. If healthcare was so good in other countries, then why would people who can afford it come to the United States for care? And at the upper
very few people actually do that. Canadians are very, very happy with their system and wouldn't exchange it with ours. There are very few exceptions. Everyone points to those. Sensational anecdotes without really,
anecdotes aside, all of the great research work is being done in the United States. The new blockbuster drugs are developed here. The new blockbuster procedures are developed here. Those things
thanks
come
to very
at great
large
cost.
Federal subsidies. You know, if it weren't for the National Institutes of Health, we wouldn't have those blockbuster drugs. I mean, we have a very generous federal financing system for basic medical research, and that's what's made it possible.
Okay. Well, again, we can agree to disagree on that particular point. My guest is Doug Henwood. He is the editor of the Left Business Observer. But in your answer, Doug, about all of this, not to be not to be overly dramatic, we don't need to worry about this. We've got 10 years to deal with it. In reality, we've known this day is coming for the past 40 years. This is not news. When you have a generation the size of the baby boom generation, of which you and I are members, it looks like a pig going through a python in terms of the effect that it has on the generation before and the generation afterwards. Politicians have historically kicked this can down the road, and your solution is to do further study, kick the can a little bit farther down the road, and we're going to at some point come to the crisis point where we need to act quickly on this, and politicians don't seem to want to tackle this. So at what point do you draw the line in the sand and say today is the day that we have to do it? We're in the midst of a recession. It's one of the longest recessions in terms of its duration now, post-World War II, and if it continues on, could really rival the Great Depression of the 1930s in terms of its duration. So the question to you is, if not now, when?
Well, the healthcare issue is a very large one that we need to address comprehensively. I think the president's reform is going to be a disaster for many people. It's going to force people to buy very expensive and very poor coverage that they're not want or not be able to afford.
It's going to force many small businesses to drop health care for their employees.
Absolutely. You know, I don't disagree. I think it's a complete disaster. It's an awful scheme. It's not going to do anything to control costs or improve coverage. Or it's terrible. I think it's a terrible mistake that it passed. So it's not going to solve our problems, but I don't think that turning Medicare into a voucher system, which is what the Republicans want to do, and I wouldn't be surprised if Democrats come around to some version of that either. I think there's, like I said, there's an elite consensus about cutting these things, and it's going to hurt an awful lot of people. Now, if we look at the countries you mentioned, Greece and Britain, the countries that have experienced fiscal crises and cut their budgets, particularly, I'm thinking of Ireland and Britain now in anticipation of such a thing, are all seeing worse recessions. Cutting your budget in when the economy is weak makes things even worse than they were. Ireland is in a wreck. It keeps getting worse. Spain has been doing similar things. Its unemployment rate is 15% and rising. Greece, they can't cut their way out of this problem. Greece has terrible problems. Well, that's a conversation itself.
It is a full conversation.
Just hacking away at budgets does not make things better. It makes things worse. So this is exactly the wrong time to do it. We also have a very severe economic problem. This is not a recession. You know, the recession officially ended about 2 years ago now, actually, June 09.
Yeah.
And we've been now 2 years into an economic recovery, and it certainly doesn't feel that way to most people. It still feels like a recession. I think we're going to see years of a really sick and troubled economy, very slow growth, poor income growth, poor job growth, high unemployment. It's going to stink for most people. And we need to figure out some way to get out of this. My preferred way would be some sort of, not just a short-term stimulus program. We need to think about some kinds of long-term growth. And to get some kind of long-term growth, I think we need clean energy, green technology, green jobs would provide a great boost. domestic employment, domestic investment, and also probably save us from climate catastrophe as well. So I think that's something we should think about over the longer term. The classic infrastructure investment, those sorts of programs, because if we cut the budget, we're going to end up in a worse shape. If we don't do anything, we're going to be in this economic mire for years to come. We've got some very, very serious problems with it.
Without a doubt.
We're not talking about it in any serious way.
Well, I would agree with part of what you say. We do have some serious problems. My guest is Doug Henwood. He is the editor of Left Business Observer. And, Doug, you made a reference to stimulus packages. I wanted to ask you about that. But you jumped into the green energy. And so let's talk about that, if we can, for just a moment. Because green energy, would agree with you that it's a great long-term plan, but in reality, it is so far away from happening, even with government money backing it, that it's going to take a long time. It is not it's not a solution for the recession that we're facing today.
I agree with that. I think this, I'm talking about we need something that's going to generate long-term growth, because we don't have it right.
All right. And certainly there are companies right here in our own backyard. Clipper Wind Power is certainly one of those companies that is leading the way, so we commend them for that effort. Let's take a look at a quantitative easing 2, which is the government stimulus package, QE2 as it's called. It's going to end in about 18 days. It's just right around the end of June is when it's going to end. And the Fed has said it's coming out of its two-day meeting, but they expect to announce there will be no QE3, so no more government stimulus. We spent, as taxpayers, $600 billion, that's billion with a B, in QE2. And the purpose of QE2 was to do two things, to curb deflation and to increase employment. Looking back on it, the $600 billion that we spent, it may have curbed deflation, if you believe that deflation was going to be a problem, but it certainly did not increase deployment. So evaluate QE2. Was it a success or a failure? Did we get our money's worth for the $600 billion, Doug?
Well, it was no taxpayer money. It was money that the Fed created out of thin air, and it's magical.
Well, it's my grandchildren's inheritance. I mean, we're robbing the future generations in order to do this. It's deficit spending.
You know, I think it was better than nothing, but not much. I think it perhaps had a minor effect in averting deflation, but it's not been any kind of very, very serious stimulus.
I would have to agree with you, and I would have to say overall not money well spent.
No, I think it's next to nothing. I think there's at this point there's not much that the Federal Reserve could do to stimulate this economy. We're in this classic, almost 1930s situation, you know, economists are pushing on the string. It's just not the Fed is not going to get this economy off the mat. You know, the banks have plenty of money on their balance sheets. Corporate America, non-financial corporations have plenty of money on their balance sheets. They're not spending it. So it's not there's not a shortage of liquidity in the economy. It's just a shortage of willingness to spend this on investment and hiring.
Yeah, and we're going to have to leave it there, Doug. I'm sorry we're out of time. But if people are interested by what you have to say, or more importantly, if they want to learn more about your publication, The Left Business Observer, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
We got a rudimentary website at leftbusinessobserver.com. Very fancy, but it works. LeftBusinessObserver, all one word, .com.
LeftBusinessObserver.com. Doug, thank you so much. We'll have to have you back in the future. We can debate some more issues. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Right.